Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I have a really incredible guest today. We're going to take a little bit of a different spin on this particular episode than we've been taking up to this point. And my guest today is Josh Roberts. And I'm going to let Josh tell you a little bit about himself. I've gotten to know Josh over the past several weeks, but I think it'd be better if he tells you a little bit about himself. So Josh, tell us a little bit about who you are.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me on your show, first of all. So I served for 20 years in the United States Air Force, did different roles, primarily a munitions technician. So I built bombs and missiles for most of my career. I did almost 5 years as a drill sergeant at Air Force Basic Training, then retired as an E-8 or Senior Master Sergeant. And since then, started my own little company called Fusewell Strategies, where I do one-on-one coaching. I do leadership development for businesses and military bases. And then I also every now and then have the opportunity to do keynote speaking at conferences and stuff like that. And especially based on my life story, a lot of people like me to speak on resilience. So just kind of all over the place, married, have 3 kids. My oldest son is in the Navy. My daughter currently is a sophomore at Hawaii Pacific University. And then my youngest son is a junior at Central High School here in Rapid City, South Dakota.
That's awesome. So, before we close at the end of this particular episode, I want you to give people a website or whatever where they can get a hold of you. After they've heard you speak, they may want to reach out to you and continue the conversation or have you come talk to them. But you mentioned something about resilience. And I know we got like a 30-minute episode here. We've got a couple things we want to talk about. But can you just touch on that? You said your story and resilience, just a couple of the things that are really built that resilience in you over the course of your life story?
Yeah, I'll get pretty transparent. I'm pretty used to telling my story at this point. So when I was born, my parents were both pretty significant drug addicts. And when I was about 4 years old, they kind of had their religious experience, became Christians and wanted to be foreign missionaries. So the course of the next several years, moving all over the United States, as my parents tried to raise support and go through missionary training. And then when I was about 7 years old, we moved to the country of Mexico. And I grew up in the country of Mexico. When I was 14, I was grabbed by a cartel and they held me for about 3 weeks. And then when I got released, I was being seen by a therapist, and that person took advantage of my age and everything else, kind of started the whole just abuse situation. When I was 18, my parents brought me back to the United States. I had an offer to play baseball at Florida State, but my parents really wanted me to go to Bible college. So I did that, had a job while I was working, had a mentor that was kind of an older gentleman. And he invited me to go on a road trip. And while we were there, he bought me a drink, drugged it. I actually woke up in the middle of him raping me. And so did that. Ended up getting married when I was in Bible college. About a month after our marriage, 9/11 happened. So I joined the Air Force. I waited a little bit. I didn't want to expose my wife to that military lifestyle. But I figured out very quickly that I didn't want to work for money. That wasn't a huge motivator to me. So during the course of my career, I had multiple experiences in different locations, building bombs and stuff like that. And I would say the most difficult thing for me was it was at this point, 15 years ago, my wife and I lost our youngest son. And then in 2018, we lost our home and everything we owned to Hurricane Michael. We were stationed at Tyndall Air Force Base. Hurricane Michael wiped our base out and, got moved up here to Rapid City to go to Ellsworth Air Force Base, and had to put close to $90,000 on credit cards and loans just because we didn't have the right insurance. Nobody had ever really explained it to me. And I just kind of failed as a father and provider in that sense. I never educated myself really on what any of that meant. And so, we didn't have clothes. We didn't have a vehicle. It was just kind of a crappy situation. So when it comes to resilience, I guess I have a different perspective on it than a lot of what is taught. The Air Force especially focuses on resilience training, speaking on, it's the ability to bounce back from tough situations, but I think it goes a little deeper than that. So yeah, just.
Not only that, but I mean, you talked about some of your challenges as an adult that required you to demonstrate resilience, but even more so, I think about as a child where you don't have any control whatsoever. Not that you do as an adult in these situations, but at least you're an adult at that point. As a kid, what I love in the times that we've talked and you've shared a lot of that with me before is your focus. While you don't dismiss that, you talk very openly about it. You're very future focused in the way you approach life and going forward. So what is it about you internally and your makeup that causes you to be so future focused, especially at this point in your life?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think actually it kind of goes back to the resilience piece, because when I think of resilience, you know, my resilience journey starts every single morning when I wake up at 4:30 and I choose to get out of bed, because there's a lot of days that I don't want to. You know, the trauma, the memories, whatever you want to call them, like sometimes those things are very heavy. And there's certain things that, you know, you don't bounce back from. Like you don't bounce back from losing a child. You don't bounce back from being raped. But it's a choice that I get to make every single day to get out of bed. And my resilience journey, I walk over and I pick up my pickaxe and I go back to this tunnel through the mountain that I've been tunneling through. And, you know, the tunnel of losing my son, I think that's one of those where, you know, you swing your pickaxe and sometimes you hit granite and you go, you know, this far, and sometimes you hit limestone and you go that far. And I think it's the same way in our lives where there are days and there are times sometimes when can make a lot of progress, and then there's some days where it's just not, it just doesn't happen. And so for me, the future focus, it's about swinging that pickaxe for me, like, you know, figuring out what the tool is that I need to use in that tunnel. Sometimes, you know, for some people that's therapy or counseling. You know, for me, the gym has been very cathartic and very helpful, but it's not enough just to deal with trauma to go to the gym. But I think for me, like, the big deal is even after like losing my son, I still have three other children that need a father that's present and a father that's whole. And so, though I may be wounded, we'll call it that, you know, you're not broke, you're wounded. Though I may be wounded, there's still the opportunity for me to go and have an incredibly impactful life and to make a difference in the lives of those that I get to coach and those that I meet, the relationships that I build. And at the end of the day, my three children are everything to me, and I will be a grandfather. I want to be the cool, tatted up grandfather that, you know, smokes a cigar and has a scotch. And I want my grandkids. There's nothing I want more in life than that. And there's just too much to live for, you know. And honestly, going through some of the counseling and the therapy I've done, you know, the question always comes up, like, what is it that you do? And for me, like, no other man on the face of this planet is giving my daughter away at her wedding. That's going to be me. And so every time I start to think negative thoughts or, you know, self-harm thoughts or anything like that, I remind myself of how much I have to live for and just how blessed I am in other areas. You know what I mean? Like, and the truth is, dude, I've heard way worse stories than mine. We'll put it that way. So not to compare, like, trauma is trauma, but at the same time, like, there's so much about life that is out there to be enjoyed, and I'm not going to let what happened in my past stop me from having a future. And that's all there is to it.
Well, I really appreciate your courage and your honesty and your candor as you share that, because we don't know who'll be listening to these podcasts. You know, I put it out there on LinkedIn. So connected with 16,000 people from across the world, from various, you know, walks of life, who knows, you know, who that will touch. You know, another thought that I have, Josh, as I'm listening to you speak, and your son that you lost at birth, Jacob, I just think how much of what you're doing for your three other kids, but also for yourself, and the way you're serving other people is such an amazing way of keeping the legacy of Jacob's life, however brief that may have been, alive. and that, you know, I know a lot of people that have lost children at various stages from birth all the way through. And one of the pieces that I try to bring to them as friends is, how can I help keep the legacy of their life, whatever period of time it was, alive? And so I hear that in you. And, you know, you were just showing me your tattoo and your hand there too, with your three kids and connected, and also the one on your top of your hand there. So, there we go. So, so part of this too, so having kids, your kids are, you know, one still in high school and you got a couple in college and so forth, but you and I have talked before about the role of teachers, since just thinking our, you know, majority of our audience will be educators or people that just have an affinity for education as a whole. Share a little bit about your thoughts around what it means to be a teacher.
Yeah, well, I can't think of a more important or honorable job in this nation, honestly. Like, you know, having spent 20 years in the military, I got very used to people saying thank you and offering me discounts. But the truth of the matter is, as an educator, as a teacher in our school system, or even, you know, private education, you literally are shaping the future of our nation. Like, and I think it's easy sometimes to get lost in the process and start to think of it as a job. But the reality is, like, as an educator, that is a calling, and to do it well, I think you have to view it as that, because it's such a position of influence. You are, by all definitions, you're a leader. You're a leader in that classroom. And something that, you know, always struck me is, you know, you have teachers, you have coaches, you have mentors, right? And I've always tried to explain it to people is, you know, where does the teacher stand? They stand at the front of the classroom. You know, the coach, where's the coach during the game? He's on the sideline, and a mentor is behind you, kind of pushing you to, I guess, reach things that you never thought were possible, or to get you to a place that they know that you're capable of getting. But that teacher, like, that is the first and most critical point. Like, there's, I don't think there's anything more important than that. And I really, you know, for your audience listening, if you are a teacher, or if you are an educator, first and foremost, I would say, with all the sincerity and authenticity that I have, thank you for your service, because it is a service. You are spending more time with our children than a lot of times we are. And so the amount, but with every great position like that comes an obligation, right? And it's an obligation to do it well, and it's an obligation to do it with excellence. And I would just encourage those that are listening, if you are that teacher, like, thank you, but please keep doing your job well, because our country is dependent on people taking that role seriously and doing it to the best of their ability.
Yeah, so appreciate that thought. You and I talked about that before. I started, when I'm flying different places or whatever, I meet someone as a teacher, I thank them for their service. I always thank service people for their service. But I started to extend the same level of gratitude and outward thanks to educators. Thank you so much for your service. They are truly in the trenches with the kids, and it can be a thankless job. You know, the episode before this episode that we're recording now was with Dr. Joe Sanfilippo. Joe was, a few years ago, the National Superintendent of the Year out of Wisconsin, and he said that, you know, Kevin, as an educator, especially teacher, you are not in this for short term, you know, return in terms of the reward. It's years later that someone says, hey, you know, Mr. Roberts, you know, when you were my teacher, blah, 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 you know, I never forgot that time you used to say this or that, and that stuck with me and that sustained me through these years. So it's not an immediate gratification. It's a delayed gratification so often for teachers. So I love the fact that just people in general in the community and so forth, parents, can say thank you. And I want to add to that list the principal, because I was a principal as well. It can be a very thankless job to be a principal of a school, and yet they have the responsibility of every teacher on that campus, every student, And, you know, let's say you have 500 kids and 70 teachers or whatever. There's like almost 600 lives you're responsible for day in and day out. If you're in high school, you could have thousands. And imagine in the business world or even in the military, if you had that level of responsibility, you know, how you would be respected and perhaps, you know, compensated or whatever. But the whole idea is, it's just, it is a tremendous responsibility. And I love that you acknowledge that. It kind of segues into the next question here. And that's this whole idea of, as an educator, you're a leader. And you talked about like the teacher at the front and so forth. So almost even physically kind of leading the students. So talk a little bit about the encouragement that you shared with me before about this leadership role as an influencer, as somebody who shapes the psychology, the attitudes, and helps to reinforce attributes in the learners that they serve.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that I have the opportunity to do is go, I teach leadership, and just as a student of leadership, I've come to kind of the conclusion that leadership is very simple at its core. It's influence and psychology. I mean, that's, great leaders know how to harness both of those. And when you think about, you know, what makes a great leader, I boil it down to those three things. It's certain attributes, it's certain attitudes, and it's certain actions. And the attributes of a great leader, you know, those are the things that are going to set them apart from everyone else and makes other people look at them and go, I want to be like that, right? Like there's just something about the ability to keep your calm when things are hectic, and the ability to relay information clearly, to communicate clearly and succinctly, to be able to, you know, just that presence and all of those things. When I think back to my time as a drill sergeant, there were so many times when I would ask, you know, these trainees, who was the greatest leader, or who do you look up to the most? And I can't tell you, Kevin, how many times it was a teacher. Like, not a parent, not a parent. It was either a teacher or coach, you know, because the reality is, in our society now, so many children come from broken homes, or they come from homes with one parent. And so they're not necessarily always getting both sides of that parental equation. A lot of times, you know, it reminds me of, like, you know, the old Civil War movies where the guy's carrying the flag and he gets shot and he's falling down, somebody else picks it up. Like, that reminds me kind of like they're standing in the gap. Like, teachers are standing in the gap. They're filling a role of not just a teacher, but they're filling a role of care. They may be the only person in that child's life that shows them that they matter, that they have value, that they have worth. And that, I mean, I'm getting chill bumps thinking about it. Like, that cannot be understated, right? Like, how many movies are out there about teachers and coaches that have literally stepped into that void in these young adults or these young children's lives, protected them? Like, there, a lot of times teachers are the ones that see the signs of things that are happening at home that shouldn't be, you know. So when I think of a leader, you know, in terms of influence, these students, maybe whether they display it or not, they are listening and they're watching, right? So they're listening to what you're saying, but they're also watching how you act. And I think that's where those attributes of, like, how you display who you are as a teacher, in the way that you care for and the way that you speak to your students, I think you're making an indelible impression that will last a lifetime. Because I'll tell you, I don't remember every sports coach, but I do remember almost every teacher I've had. You know what I mean? Like,
wow. Well, what I love about what you just said is it's the essence of who they are, not so much what they say or what they do, but the essence of who they are. And I shared this on a previous podcast, but I was working on my master's degree in ed leadership, and I was failing my first class, and I was just floundering. I don't know why I was there. I just thought, this is the next step. I was a teacher for so many years. Now I'm going to work toward becoming a principal, but I didn't have a clue. professor pulls me aside. He says, Kevin, you're making it way too difficult. He said, being a leader is not about what you say, what you do. It's about who you are. Go to the library, pick out a biography or an autobiography, read that book, but read it through the lens of how does this person minister to others in their lives? And I don't mean minister necessarily in a religious way, but the whole idea is, you know, I was studying education administration. So he said the root word of administration is minister. So how do they minister to others? And you just touched on that so beautifully. And it's so awesome to have, you know, a non-K-12 educator on here articulating, excuse me, better than most, just what it means to be a teacher and the impact that a teacher has and can have on the lives of the students that they serve. Well, speaking of serving, that's a great segue too into where we talked about going next. So, you know, I've been working on the support education side for 25 years through professional development and resources and technology, software, hardware, and so forth. And through that work, got introduced pretty extensively to career and technical education. And so we start talking more and more about career readiness in addition to college readiness. We're always talking about college readiness. But then the next piece is military readiness. So college, career, military readiness, CCMR. So what I don't hear talked about hardly at all is this whole concept of military readiness. The only way I hear it talked about is we have a JROTC program or an ROTC program. And that's the part of it. So I would like you to speak to that a little bit more for our listeners, because you're serving kids all over the nation who may very well be entering military. And we want them to go in with their eyes open and to be as prepared and ready as possible. So what are your thoughts on that, Josh?
Well, so obviously I spent 20 years in the military and, you know, having been a drill sergeant at basic training, I received a lot of young recruits right out of high school. I guess I have a couple of thoughts. First, military service is not a downgrade to college. Military service is the highest calling, maybe besides being a teacher, that this country has. Like, if you really want to get to the nuts and bolts of why this country is great, it's great on the backs of men and women that pledged their lives in service to this nation. And I'm talking not just enlisted that sign up with a recruiter. I'm talking men and women that go to years and years of education so that they can be leaders at the highest level. I think as an educator, instead of discouraging children, you know, from military service, ask them the question of why. Like, why do they want to be in the military? And that is a big deal, because, you know, you can watch these recruitment videos and yeah, you get the GI Bill and you get this and you get this and you get this. The problem is all those things are determined by Congress and none of them are guaranteed. Three times while I was in the military, we went through sequestration where I was told they weren't sure if we were getting our paychecks or not, but we sure were going to show up for work, because if we didn't, we were going to jail. So at the end of the day, military service, all those benefits aside, it is ultimately about serving this country. And so as an educator, if you are able to teach and show your students the value of what being from a free nation actually is, then it makes it that much easier for them to understand why it's so important that we have high quality men and women joining and serving, whether it's for 4 years, 8 years, or 20 years. Serving this nation, it's a privilege. It's not a right. And not everybody gets to do it. We have one of the most selective processes in the world as far as who does get to join and who doesn't. Height requirements, weight requirements, you know, you had certain medication when you were a kid, you can't. So this is not, it's not a guaranteed thing. So, you know, I think for educators to make that a point of, whether you agree with the politics or you agree with the governing party or whatever, none of that matters. What matters is that this is the greatest, most free country in the world. And it's going to take great men and women like my son to serve her. right? To serve and protect her. And it doesn't have to be a lifetime, but at the same time, you do get great benefits, right? The GI Bill, that will pay. My daughter goes to college for free because I was able to transfer my GI Bill to her. So she's going to college in Hawaii for free based on my service. Like, there's a lot, you know, a VA loan, the VA healthcare system, it's not perfect, but I tell you what, it's a lot better than a lot of people have. So there are a lot of benefits to serving. The biggest of which, though, in my opinion, and this might sound cheesy, but it's just how I feel, there was nothing I took greater pleasure in than putting my uniform on in the morning for 20 years. That was a symbol of pride for me. Like, that, I wasn't ashamed of serving my country. I loved it with every fiber of my being. And so there is a certain level of pride, I think, that is instilled in serving our nation. There's a certain level of discipline, respect for authority, hard work. These are all pluses, man. Like, this is not a downgrade. This is something, especially, you know, if a student doesn't have a great idea of what they'd like to do for the rest of their life, is there an aspect of danger? Of course. But you know what? There is in every job. So, like, I would encourage, you know, teachers, have those conversations and then ask them why they want to join the military. Because if it's to go be what you see on the movies, that's not real. But if it's because they want to serve this nation and honestly set themselves up for the future, there's very few things that I can think of that would set you up as well as the United States military does.
I love that. You know, in addition to that, you talked before about critical thinking. And I've been sharing with you, especially with the onset of AI and the rapid growth of AI in our schools and in our world, what's the impact going to be on critical thinking? That's been one of my questions. And I have learned that if we play our cards right and do things appropriately, we can actually enhance humanity through this, you know, augmentation of artificial intelligence. So, in my opinion, becoming a critical thinker is more important than ever. And I've worked with ROTC, JROTC programs in the past. And there was one guy in particular, Jerry Marguia, who was with the US Army, who taught me as a 30-something-year-old that that the military, in terms of how they teach, the training, the sophistication of the pedagogy, actually exceeded your traditional K-12 environment, and even some, you know, college classes and so forth. And I had no idea until he taught me and showed me just how sophisticated the approach to problem solving and critical thinking was in preparation for the military and serving in the military. Could you affirm that or negate it based on your experience?
I would 100% agree. You know, the nice thing about the military is we're about usually 15 or 20 years behind everybody else when it comes to technology. And that, you know, so when things go wrong, you don't have time to sit there and ask somebody, what should I do? You know, I mean, like, if you're the one in charge, you better make it. And I'm talking in charge as early as, you know, 2 to 3 years in the military. You can easily be a supervisor that's having to look out for other people, that's having to make decisions for other people, that's having to make decisions for 5 to 10 people. And, you know, in my career field, let's say building bombs, you know, we have these great machines to help us do it until the power goes out. And now what? You know, I mean, we have to get bombs on the plane. Like, that plane is taking off. Like, this mission is going to Afghanistan. So what do we do? And that's where you start to see people's brains like, okay, we can do this, we can do this. And there's no help manual. You have to make a decision and you have to live with it. And I love that because, like, at the end of the day, owning the consequences of your decisions, like, that is something that our society is rapidly getting away from. And in the military, there's no room. Like, you make a choice, that's it. Like, if you're the one in charge, you make your call. So I love how, you know, I think as a military, we do teach men and women at a young age to start thinking for themselves, even though there is a system, right? Like, you have a boss that tells you what to do, but they don't tell you every step of what to do, right? And, like, you are kind of, you're on your own. If you don't tie your boots right, or you don't wear a uniform right, you are going to pay the consequences for that. You will, you know, and honestly, sometimes your whole unit will. So it really, I think it really does reinforce like the importance of make good decisions and learn how to go through the thought process of if I do A, B or C will occur, which choice do I want to happen, right? What's in the best interest of me and my people? And I think it's, the military is a great, great teacher. It's not for everybody. And I would never say it is. It's not. Like, if you have a hard time with authority, that is not the place for you. But at the same time, like, it's a great schoolroom for life, right? Like, and I do encourage people to at least give it an opportunity, like at least look into it, right? It's not for everybody, but there are, it's probably for more people than realize it. So I am writing a book. Yeah. It is leadership. So I wrote the book as a love letter to my son, who is about to be a petty officer. So he's going to be a leader in his own right. And it's essentially, it's called Leadership Level Up, and it's how to go from being good to a great leader. And in it, I basically list the 7 attributes or qualities that I think help a leader go from being a good leader to a great leader. And I give very personal examples in the book of how I failed at each one of those and what the consequences were, both for myself and the people that I led. And then I try to give them easy, well, not say easy, we'll say practical ways that if they don't have that quality, how they can build it.
We can't wait for the book to come out, and we will let people know about the book and how to secure one when you get it published. Well, Josh, I try to keep these to about 30 minutes, and we're rounding out the time here, but I always want to give the guest an opportunity to share anything else about what you're just thinking that you didn't have the opportunity to talk about during the course of this particular episode. So anything else you're just thinking about?
Oh, I was just thinking that, you know, my daughter is currently in college to be a teacher. Like, she wants to be an elementary school teacher. And so many people have been like, doesn't she know that she's not going to get paid very much? And I think the funny thing is that's never once crossed her mind, right? She wants to do it because she wants to make a difference. And so I would just say yet again, if you're listening and you are in the education field, no matter what role it is, a superintendent, a principal, or a teacher, please understand how valuable and critical you are to this nation and to the success of this nation moving forward. You are probably the most critical piece of securing our future as Americans. And so I would just, again, say thank you. Thank you for what you do for our children and for our nation. Thank you for giving my daughter a role model to look up to and want to be like. And if there's anything that I can personally do, you know, whether it's come to motivational speaking or whatever, it would be my pleasure and an honor to do that. But it's just, please don't ever underestimate the importance that you have, because you guys are every bit as important as the United States military. That's a fact.
I love that. Educators don't hear that enough. So it's a great note on which to end. And also, Josh, thank you to you, because we started off this conversation you walking us through some darkness and talking about resilience, but how you have come through to the light and been a light for so many people. You may not always feel that way internally, depending on, you know, 4:30 when you get up in the morning, how much you slept or whatever, but you clearly are a tremendous light for clearly your wife, your kids, your community, and anybody who'll be listening to this and anybody you've served in your 20 years of service. So I want to say thank you for that. And I look forward to the next conversation we have. We'll have to do this again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you.